Reiner Schaag from TSN joins us. Schager, how are you?
Top shelf, buddy. How was your weekend?
Excellent. Excellent.
Nice.
Lots happening. It was good. A few things. To me, it's kind of a, like, it's, I love what Yakupov did, but the fact that it's getting such a big story to me is the underlying issue that people are like, hey, they stood up for one another. That's a story. Like, that should be just like a normal thing.
I know, eh? It's, when it's breaking news in Edmonton that a player stood up for another player, that's a bit of an issue. I agree with you. I think there's a couple of circumstances that maybe add to it a little bit. One, it had been a storyline lately because Taylor Hall had, you know, Struds wrote about it, talked about it on his show. You guys had talked about it as well. The Taylor Hall had been sort of aggressively gone after in a couple of games, and maybe there wasn't the proper response. So it had been a pretty significant storyline in town the last few games. So when Nail went and did what he did, jumping on a bigger guy, doing it in kind of WWE style, so obviously, I think it was just because it's been talked about lately, a big deal has been made of it. So I think that's probably why this is grabbing headlines. But you're right in that there is an underlying problem. And it's that, and Dallas Eakins, if you listen to his press, his scrum after the game, talked about the fact that earlier in the year, they'd be in those situations and there'd be nobody coming. There'd be nobody jumping in. There was no help coming at all. And that they've tried to address that. And they've done that by bringing in some different types of guys. And I think overall they're harder to play against now than they were before. It's still not where it needs to be. But this was a significant issue for this team earlier this year. And it had to be fixed. And it still needs to get better. And it shouldn't be headline news when an Oiler steps in for another Oiler. That's just the way it should always be. Every winning team, they always have that mentality, that pack mentality. And the Oilers need to find a way to develop it. The problem is that you don't necessarily have guys who have had to do that before. And they're on the ice most of the time. So it's doesn't necessarily come natural.
After watching Jordan Staal, there's a lot of people wondering if he would be a guy the Oilers should look at in the summer. Supposedly Carolina's trying to rid some salary.
Yeah.
Do you think he would be a fit for Edmonton on their second line as a center?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's big, he's rangy, he can kill penalties. He's shown he can be a pretty high-end two-way center in this league when he is on his game. So I do think that he's a fit. I'm not convinced of the competitiveness in terms of. There've been a few things from him over the years that I've seen in different playoff series where he doesn't seem like a real driver to me. He's a complimentary piece. But I do think that he's the type of player that they need. He's the type of guy that would help. I guess it just depends on what the cost is.
Do you think,
I mean, that's the kind of guy they need, right? I mean, that it's pretty obvious. They need some size down the middle.
Oh, without a doubt they do. I watched that game, and I've been watching the games for different reasons lately and, you know, focusing on certain guys. Sam Gagne that makes that play, Ryan, in the very early in that game against Carolina. Carolina's coming in. I can't remember if it was Marinson or Klepbom's a defender. So the Carolina guy's going down. Sam Gagne's back in the right position. Rather than look over his shoulder to see the guy coming in late, all he does is beeline right to the guy into the corner. He passes the puck out to the Carolina guy wide in front of the net. Right, like, at what point do they look and say, you know what, like, where Sam Gagne's got to be more responsible defensively and be held accountable to it? Because I'm not seeing any improvements in that area of his game.
Yeah, it's been kind of an ongoing frustration, I think, for some time. Sam has struggled to find the other way in his game, and the numbers aren't there for Sam to be a purely offensive player. They never have been. The numbers aren't there for Gagne to allow him to just strictly be an offensive player. He needs to have a defensive conscience because he's not good enough offensively, flat out, to not be good in his own zone. So, yeah, that part of his game has been missing and it's been lacking, and there have been times where it's been worse than other times. But this is a year where it's been as bad as it's probably ever been. So, minus 21 in 55 games, it's an ugly stat. And I know not everybody loves the plus-minus stat, but sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. The problem is the pivotal point in making a decision on Sam Gagne has come and gone already. Craig McTavish was at that point in the last offseason. Cut bait on this guy or signed to a deal and gave him a lot of money. And he gave him a few years here. And so now you have to work with the player because I just don't think the return is there.
Oh, no, of course not. But at some point, you're going to have to make a decision. I don't know if you can just keep hoping and praying that eventually it's going to kick in because the onus has to be on the player.
Yeah. I mean, he belongs in the NHL. Like, this is an NHL player. But what do you do? Do you trade him away for next to nothing and just cut bait and say, okay, and probably have to take some salary back and say, okay, mistake made on your move? Or do you feel you can work with the player still? Is there you invested in him. So you kind of have to keep working with him. Otherwise, you give him away for nothing, and now you have to give up some other kind of asset to fill the hole. If there were a trade for Gagne that brought back a defenseman that could play a reasonable amount of minutes and consistently that you have for a few years, I'd do that deal. I'm just not sure what kind of deals were there for Gagne. And I don't know what the alternative is, just to lose the asset for nothing. I don't know that that's the right thing to do either.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Ryan, did you read the article today by Greg Such, the former Ontario Hockey League player, talking about the Trafford tragedy?
No, but I heard you last segment discussing it and talking about it. And I've read a couple of articles regarding this. So I'm reasonably comfortable talking about it, but I didn't read the article you're talking about.
Well, a few of the things he said was, you know, one of the big concerns is in hockey is that, you know, the words "I'm a hockey player" is almost like a stigma. It's become so overwhelming and blown out of proportion. It consumes our lives. We grow up playing hockey, and after a while, we allow hockey to define us. It becomes who we are. Everything about us is related to hockey, the way we carry ourselves, the way we dress, the way we act, the way we talk. And, you know, when people meet them, all they want to do is talk hockey about them. You know, it's just an interesting one coming from a player. You know, he talked about the tough aspects of the game as well, that, you know, you're supposed to be hockey all the time, all the time, all the time. And, you know, when I look, and I've seen it firsthand, and you played it in the West, albeit for a short time, but the pressure and the stigma of players and how somehow you're a failure if you don't make it to the NHL, right? Mm-hmm. When only like less than 0.002% make it, that the others are all failures. Like, it's amazing to me.
Well, I think that, I mean, look, there's anytime tragedies like this happen, as a hockey world, as an institution, as far as each individual league goes, they're going to have to look at ways to try and, you know, to try and figure out if they can do better. And I think that that's what has to come from something like this. So players speaking out about the pressures that they felt in their experience, that's a good thing. Everybody's experience is different. So what Trafford's experience might have been, or what this fellow's experience might have been, you bring some of these points to light and you discuss it and you have discussions on it, and that's a good thing. I know lots of guys who came through the league and, like you said, went on and had healthy college careers, good family men, and hockey was nothing but a positive thing for them. I also know players who were under a tremendous amount of pressure from a very, very young age, and it did rule their lives, and it did consume them, and the pressure was too much, and it drove them from the game. Some kids end up walking away. Others maybe stick with it out of different pressures and then end up dealing with things like depression. So the important thing is it needs to be discussed. I don't think you can paint all hockey players with any brush. Every kid is different. Every person is different. Everybody's experience is going to be different. But it's important to provide avenues for guys who are going through things. It's important to keep the discussion going because everybody's experience is different, and there are those who have a really, really tough time, and they need to be able to hit the pressure release valve. They need to be able to. I remember a few years ago, really good young player, Stefan Legion was his name, played for Team Canada overseas in that Super Series. Real good. I think he was a second-round draft pick.
Yeah, and then he quit.
And then he quit, walked away from the game, and the pressure of it was just too much. You know, and at the time, people were thinking, oh, my goodness gracious, how could this person do this? Like, second-round pick, good player, one of Canada's better players of that tournament. This guy was going to make the NHL. He was on his way. He just quit. And it was all talking him back into playing and get him back into playing. Well, I don't know where Stefan Legion is now. I don't know what the situation is now. But I remember at the time when so many people are thinking maybe he's just made a horrible mistake and thrown away. I remember at the time thinking, if that's what he feels he needs to do, then maybe he's doing the right thing, you know. But not everybody can necessarily make that decision. Not everybody can save themselves from whatever pressure they may be under. So I think the discussion is important, but I think we need to be careful about claiming that something is wrong with the whole system. I think we need to be careful about that because a lot of people have much different experiences with the game, with the leagues, with the life experience they draw from it. I don't think it needs to be painted with a clouded brush, but
No. I don't think
discussions need to happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it should be painted though as it's all rosy and it's the best thing ever. I think there are things that people need to look at, and the biggest one I find, and I've had a lot of heated discussions over the years with scouts and GMs at the AJA and the WHL level. When I talk about the biggest mistake I find is that the teams get so focused on their own what they want, which is wins, that they don't look at 16-year-old players and do what's best for them. And in a lot of cases, it's sending them back home at 16 rather than sit as a fourth line guy and never play. Because your confidence doesn't grow even if you play every game playing 6 minutes a night when you're supposed to be a skilled player. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and when I played, I mean, I was never in that situation because I never would have made the league at 16. I was 18, so I was a little bit more mature, even as a rookie. But there were guys on our team who were 16 years old who shouldn't have been there. I mean, maybe from a skill standpoint, they belong there, but the way that our team was using them, it was just a waste. We took good young players and just wasted them because they just weren't ever even used. Guys who had potential, and it definitely stunted them and definitely hurt them. And I've seen that firsthand, and I've seen the turmoil that they go through going from being stars in minor hockey to an afterthought in the Western Hockey League. And I'm not talking about first-round draft picks. I'm talking about guys who still managed to make the team at a young age. And so I agree with you that it's similar to when a guy is ready to play in the NHL, or there's a debate about whether he's ready to play in the NHL or not. It's quite often it's about, well, does the team need him? Does he fit on the team? Can he play in this role or that role? And it's not about what's best for the player. And especially when you're talking about younger teenagers, it needs to be more about what's better for this player. But that is where the parents need to be smarter. That's where the parents need to read the tea leaves and do what's best. And that's an extremely difficult situation for a parent of a young man to go to a Western Hockey League general manager and say, we appreciate you wanting our child to play this year, but we feel he's not mature enough and not ready, so we'll see you at camp next year. That's almost impossible to ask of parents to do in that situation. And it's a problem.
Why do you think it's impossible?
Well, I just think, I mean, maybe impossible isn't the right way to say it, but I mean, the kid's going to want to play, right? So you have the kid that wants to play. You have the team that wants him to play. You have the scout who played a part in drafting him probably saying that he should play. It's tough. It's in order for a parent to be able to stand there and say, listen, I know what you're all saying, but sorry, I'm going to hold my kid back. He's going to play junior A for another year. When all this kid wanted since the day he was drafted, potentially, maybe, was to go to the Western Hockey League and play there, if that's what the kids always wanted. I mean, man, if my dad would have said to me, sorry, kiddo, I know you really want this, but you're not ready. I mean, holy smokes. So, I mean, the responsibility is with the kid and with the parents to make the right decision. But teams, I've seen guys get ruined. It happens. It absolutely happens. Guys get ruined by being brought out, they're asked to move away from home too young. They're not mature enough. They're not confident enough. It stunts them maturity-wise, stunts them socially. Some guys are fine. Some guys handle it just fine. You know, I remember we had one guy, Stephen Ganey, who's Bob Ganey's son, moved all the way across the country as a 16-year-old to play for the Blazers. 16 years old. He'd recently lost his mom. Steve had to grow up real young. And for him, it was fine. He did fine, went on to have a good pro career, played some time in the NHL. He was able to handle the rigors and the mental aspect of it. We had other guys, and I won't go into names of some of the other guys, but we had other guys that just, at 16 years old, just really struggled with all of that and would have been far better off had they just stayed closer to home, played some junior A, and come back a year stronger, a year more mature. But who makes that decision for a 16-year-old that just desperately wants to play and has been told he's made the team?
Well, I guess that's making the team and playing, or that's where it becomes the big one, right? Mm-hmm. And can a coach guarantee you that he's going to get top? I understand you don't guarantee a guy a lot of minutes. You can't guarantee the minutes, but you do. I think you have a pretty good idea of who your top nine forwards are on most teams at any level. You know who they are. If you know the guy's a third liner, you know he's a fourth liner. The problem I have is when they flat out lie. That's my problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know I don't have any fingers to point at anybody. I don't know any accusations. I don't have any accusations to make. But yeah, I think it's the organization's responsibility to be completely upfront and honest with where these kids are. So if you're the Edmonton Oil Kings and you're looking at prospect, you know, X, who is a third-round draft pick of yours, who has a spot to go play on a junior A team as a 16-year-old, probably be one of their top six forwards, you have to be honest. You have to be honest with the kid. You have to be honest with the parent. This is their future. This is important. You can't mislead people to stock your team with, when really your intention is to play him as a fourth-line winger. I agree. And especially when you're dealing with kids. And again, you know, and most organizations worth their salt, and most organizations out there, I think, I would assume, try and do that. Try and be straight up and honest with these kids and their parents. Any amount of deceit, I mean, you're starting to mess with kids' futures, and it gets pretty dicey. And I think you'd get a bad reputation pretty quick.
Yeah, well, only if they talk. And a lot of the times they don't talk, right? That's the other thing. It's always the whispers behind, but no one comes out and says it. Because a lot of the other thing is, no one wants to be looked at, and there's really an underlying issue, Ryan, and you would agree this, being around hockey, there's an underlying issue that nobody wants to be the one who comes out to complain, because if you do that, then you're going to be blacklisted.
Well, yeah, and I mean, especially if you do have designs on playing for the organization at some point. So, I mean, let's say you feel like something's unfair, you're 16 years old and something's horribly unfair, and so do your parents speak up? Do they not? When this team drafted you, they have your rights. If you're going to play in the league, it's going to be for them. So it's difficult because it's a dream you're chasing, and I'm pretty certain that this would probably exist in most sports. There's politics involved in it all the time, you know, and I can speak from my experience. You know, my parents were the type of people who, if they felt there was something that needed to be said, they would stand up and say it regardless of what the consequences might be. But not everybody is in a position to do that. Not everybody is in a position to be able to be the squeaky wheel because, you know, you never know who you're dealing with and what the consequences could be. It's tough. And there is a lot of that sort of politicking that goes on in all sports. And it's an industry where millions and millions and millions of dollars are made off of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. And so the realities of the big business world come crashing down onto a segment of the population that's probably far too young to really have to deal with it. But it's just the way it is. It's amateur athletes who basically need to become professionals at 16 in the way they think about things. So it's not for everybody, that's for sure. And some can handle it better than others. And like this whole conversation started, I think it is a high-pressure world. And it's a high-pressure sport to play, especially at an elite level. And these players need to know that there are options and that there's outlets for them. And if they don't know about it, if it's not made clear enough, then the league needs to take a good look at it and say, okay, how do we let these guys know that if there's a problem, that there's an outlet for them?
Yeah, the best part of the article was he was asked for players to write down the five things they valued most, but you couldn't write down hockey. And you couldn't write down family and friends. And those young players at 16 and 17, the focus is so much on one thing that you don't know anything else. And that's where I think it was the great point. It doesn't mean you can't practice and train, but there's got to be some other things.
Well, it's funny, you know, when you look at the way that the hockey system is now, it's so different than when you and I were maybe coming up through it, in that it's a year-round thing. So you have hockey during the year, during the school year, then you have spring hockey, then you got summer camps, then you're right back into hockey. And it's if you miss one of these steps, then maybe you're not quite good enough to make a triple A team, or maybe it's an all-consuming year-round thing. And so what we're raising at times with the ones who are so hardcore is hockey robots and not athletes. And I remember Brent Sutter told me this one time. He said this is back originally when he was coaching the Red Deer Rebels. So you can always tell when the difference between the athletes and the hockey players, and that he's looking for athletes. He wants a kid that can throw baseball as well as he can shoot a hockey puck. He wants a kid that can, because that those are the ones whose development is going to be limitless, or the athletes. My nephew goes through it, right? He's a high level goaltender in Sherwood Park, and it's a year round thing for him. He absolutely loves it to death. Every second of it, he loves it. So of course, if he loves, as long as he loves it and he's on board and he's not pressured at all and he loves it, so great. It's a good positive thing. But if there are ones parents out there who push their kids into these things when maybe the true love for it isn't there, or they need a break, or they need a, but the fear is that they're going to miss a step and maybe not make this team or maybe not make that team, and kids get pressured into situations where that's where it all starts. It's, you know, it's got to be fun. It can't be this rat race of how much you can pack in. You know, it's got to be fun for the kids, and parents need to read off of their kids and make sure that they're up for every ounce of what's coming at them, you know, because it's a 24/7, 12 months a year thing. It can be. And that's the way it seems people feel the path needs to be to raise an elite athlete.
Shocker, we'll talk orders tomorrow. Appreciate your time.
Okay, buddy. Enjoy your day.